Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Weekly, a new Eurogamer podcast where we recap the week for you. I'm Bertie, your host, the writer for the site, and I'm joined each week by members of the Eurogamer team and beyond as we whisk through the news, features, reviews, and videos we've published on the site this week. Supporters of the website get these episodes on Fridays, a few days before everyone else. To find out more about becoming a supporter, check the description below. Joining me today are Eurogamer Editor-in-Chief Martin Robinson. Hi, Martin.
Hello.
And ReadPop Deputy Editorial Director Wesley Yin Paul. Hey, Wes.
Hello, Bertie. It still sounds very weird when anyone says that out loud.
I know. You're telling me. So this, then, is the week ending Friday 13th of May, auspicious for some, 2022. And big news has just landed, literally as we were about to press record on this podcast, that Starfield, Bethesda Game Studios' next big game set in sci-fi universe, has been delayed to the first half of 2023. I'm still feeling a bit shocked about that.
I think we're all still literally reading it. It literally just landed while turned up. It was incredible, yeah.
So this had a specific date of 11th of November.
Yeah, 11/11/22, which they will have been desperate to hit because it was, you know, it was a statement date, release date. Yeah. And also, like, what else has Xbox got? You know, this is going to be an Xbox exclusive.
True. And so, the reason they're holding it back is because they just want a bit more time with it.
It's the sort of boilerplate statement where they say, we can't wait for you to play it, we need some more time, thanks for all the support, we can't wait to show you the game soon, you know, we want to make it the best, most polished versions of them. It could be the case that they were in a situation where it could have come out, but it would have had lots of bugs and stuff, the kind of stuff that they, you know, historically.
It's a Bethesda game. It wouldn't be a Bethesda game without.
Well, maybe they want to change that. Maybe they want to be. This was like the change, and if they put it out then now, it just wouldn't. You know, they wouldn't have been able to get it to. It would have just been, oh, Bethesda's done it again. You know, the dragons are flying backwards. The buckets are on the NPCs. You know, obviously not this game, but the spaceships are flying backwards.
Maybe there weren't enough bugs. Maybe they played it and it was like. Because if you played one of those Bethesda games that didn't happen, you'd be disappointed. Maybe there weren't enough bugs in it, and I was like,
"I mean,
you would
be disappointed."
You can still
we want polished games.
You can still get space buckets, right?
Well, yeah. You know, you throw up a lot in space, although it just sort of floats away. It's more of a net, space net. I can't believe it in a way. I can't because they had the date locked in.
I'm shocked, but also not too, like, I am, it is a shock, but also we hadn't really seen anything of it. And I keep thinking, am I not paying attention or something? But it's been such a slow drip feed of stuff.
Yeah, but everyone was sort of looking at the Xbox and Bethesda showcase for June as being like, right, you know, and that would have been fine, you know, June and then leading up to November, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
But so now it's kind of like, what do they have? Nothing.
Halo Infinite Season 3.
Halo Battle Royale.
Yeah. When do you think they made a call on this? Do you think it was like a week ago or like a month ago?
I don't think it was that long ago. Yeah,
I think it would have been within the past few days, really.
And do you think it's probably the state of whatever they're making for the June showcase? Do you think that's made them go?
Maybe.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I wrote a good shout because they would have been getting that. That would have been a big milestone for them to get it ready to show off, and then they'd have looked at it and going, this isn't ready to show off.
So there's a lot of, like, Cyberpunk was 2 years ago, but it's still fresh in the memory for a lot of game companies. And, you know, maybe they were worried that it was going to have that sort of cyberpunk-y launch effect.
Because
it's Xbox One game.
This first half, 2023, is that worrying? It's a bit vague.
I don't know. It seems a bit. It feels like this happens quite a lot. Basically, obviously, with like the Q1 is a new Q4. Is something we've been saying for ages. All the games seem to just be rammed into January to March next year. So I could see it coming in March, but then you've got Breath of the Wild 2, the potential new Switch next March as well. And
yeah, we said just... this last year about this year.
I know exactly. What happened? It just keeps on going on. What year is it?
You know, I just like Jesus Christ. I was thinking, you know, Starfield was going to be like as a sort of November Christmas game, like yeah. Massive, enormous, like tens of millions of sales, Game Pass subs through the roof for Christmas, like, you know, and they had it all to themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, what were they going up against? COD, it's not really crossover, you know? Sony, God of War is, you know, God of War will be next. I'm waiting for the tweet from Sony. Exactly the same words, but for God of War.
I had no expectations of God of War being a 2022 game. I think that, I thought, well, I've always thought that was a 2023 game.
Still down for, 2022 officially.
So, we're still reeling from this. We should also say that Redfall, the Arcane co-op shooter, not quite as significant as Starfield, but that's also been pushed back to the first half of 2023 in the same vague window. But let's leave that behind for now, and let's whisk on, because time is running away with us.
That's what Bethesda said.
Exactly.
Phil Spencer came to visit. Sorry, Bertie. Yeah. This is why I'm not on these things.
Yeah, I know. Just causing chaos.
One of the big things that happened in news this week, and we're not going to dwell on it because there has been a whole newscast podcast about it, which you can listen to on this feed as well, but we have to touch on it. EA rebranded its FIFA series, or more accurately, it ditched the FIFA branding. The football series is still going to continue, but the games are going to be called something else. Wes, as a FIFA fan, what the hell's going on?
I know. What a news week. Jamie Mac. Nearly 30 years of FIFA from EA.
I know. The depressing thing was, because I've been playing since the start, which is really sad. And I remember I played the first one, which had David Platt on the cover, with which makes me feel incredibly old.
Oh my God, I was still PES then, or ISS, I think it was then.
ISS, what is it, 93, 94? The Mega Drive one with, the isometric one. I mean, I played the first two, then obviously being a gaming hipster, moved back to ISS, or to ISS. I had the amazing kind of bug or feature in it where if the referee was about to book you, you could just keep on running away indefinitely. And then they couldn't book you until they caught you. And so if you're playing a two-player match, you can just really wind someone up by just basically being really filthy and then spending the entire match running away from the referee. Beautiful.
That is such, you would definitely do that.
All the time.
Absolute scumbag.
Bring back that bug. So what does this mean? Because I think the biggest problem for a lot of people is the wording. Because to the millions of fans who play this game around the world, it's FIFA.
Mm.
What's it now?
It will be called... So people forget the actual official name for the game now is EA Sports FIFA. Yeah. No one ever says that out loud. No one even writes that. So the new game is going to be called EA Sports FC. So no one will say that out loud. They might say FC. It's the same number of syllables as FIFA. If you're playing the new FC, will be a thing that I think eventually, over the course of a few years, people will just start saying.
It's going to be hard, though, because it's like COD. It's like FIFA is. It's like FIFA, COD, and Mario. You just feel like they're just the three staples. And I think even after the Switch, people are still going to call FC FIFA. And then whatever FIFA is, people just won't call it anything because they won't be playing it. But yeah, it's just going to be really hard to make that change because it's just one of those things that's just been part of the landscape for so long. I know FIFA.
Are you still going to call it FIFA?
I'm sure it's going to be hard not to for a while.
Are you calling eFootball PES?
Yeah, basically.
It's not PES.
It is still PES. I call it Winning. I should call it Winning 11. Actually, I think you'll find.
Oh, yeah.
So,
of course you do.
We should say that not much about the game is actually changing. All the licensed clubs and all that kind of stuff. Like, really, it's going to be almost exactly the same. It's just that EA doesn't have to spend, and this is probably why they don't have to spend billions of dollars on the franchise.
Right, yeah. So it's ultimately about two corporations arguing over money, which is, you know, not the reason people go out to play football in the backyard, but it's the reality of big business. At least in the short term, like, there won't be any change. So EA is actually putting a FIFA game out, its last FIFA game out this year, and that will have the World Cup content, official World Cup content for the World Cup this December in it. That will be EA's last FIFA game. And then from next year, FIFA is free to contract other developers to make FIFA games. And there's a slightly demented quote from the guy who runs FIFA at the moment, who's like, FIFA is the best. It's literally says the best in all caps in his statement. Just like, it's proper Trumpian.
Yeah, it's
madness.
So Trump. Yeah, it's incredible.
And he's like, FIFA 24 is going to be like, FIFA 20, unless you've got someone lined up now, has been working on this for like the last decade, you're not competing with EA at all. Like, who are you going to pull out the hat to make an EA Sports FC killer for next year? It's not going to happen.
There is a football sim that's been quietly tooling up for the last couple of years, isn't there?
It's not going to be anything like...
I know, but I'm just saying, just in terms of they could...
But I'm saying, like, so EA was reportedly giving FIFA $150 million a year for the privilege of putting FIFA on the box. And FIFA reportedly wanted twice that. So they wanted to double it. And, you know, corporations do this all the time. You know, this was a deal signed years ago. This FIFA is massive, makes billions of dollars. You know, they go, we want more money. Okay. That doesn't necessarily make FIFA evil. Corporations do this all the time. They reassess deals when the money is there. FIFA also reportedly wanted to make it non-exclusive, and EA weren't happy with that because they got exclusive on FIFA. They spent a lot of time and money building up the brand, and they weren't happy with that either. So, you know, they've just walked away. FIFA, the entity, the institution, will do incredibly well to get $150 million out of someone to make a FIFA game. Like, it's well,
Konami just posted their best year yet. Okay,
I don't think eFootball contributed to that bottom line. I don't know the ins and outs, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that didn't work out well for them.
Okay. Let's leave football behind and crash on. Interesting stuff to come from that. I can't wait to see how it develops. It's all gossipy and juicy. So another big thing that happened this week was the Nintendo Indie World Showcase, a stream of announcing new games and dates or games that were coming to Switch. Martin, as our resident, not our only Switch fan, but as one of the biggest here, which games jumped out at you in this showcase?
There was some cool stuff there, but it felt obviously it was defined by the absence of a couple of big games, I think.
Which were?
Silksong, obviously, the Hollow Knight follow-up, which everyone's been eagerly waiting for what feels like an eternity. And I think it was the longest distance we've had in between Nintendo Indie Directs. And so the expectation was that they were holding out for something. We was all thinking, oh, they must be holding out for the Silksong release date. And it didn't feature at all, sadly. And Sports Story as well, which is a follow-up to kind of a darling of kind of the early years of Switch, Golf Story, which is fantastic. We've all been waiting for that. That wasn't there either. And there was cool stuff there, but it feels like it's cool stuff that you've played on PC before or that might run better on PC. Like Totally Awesome Battle Simulator, Accurate Battle Simulator, even Tabs, which we don't think is going to run that well on a Switch because it barely runs that well on Xbox. Ooblets coming out this summer looks cool. I'm going to have to be cheat now and bring up the story because I can't remember everything that was in there.
There's an interesting game that's
to Google
called There's an interesting game coming out called We Are OFK. I don't know what that stands for. I imagine it's a swear word in the middle, but I'm not sure. Anyway, probably completely wrong. But this is quite interesting. It's like an episodic narrative game that's coming to Switch with the first two episodes coming in the summer. And it's about a band, so there's music in it. That's going to be a strong part of it. This sounds like quite an interesting idea.
Yeah, it's cool. It's been knocking around for a while, and it's had that presence at some shows before because it's obviously very visually arresting. It looks beautiful. Although all these games do seem to be coalescing into a single aesthetic, so it does become a bit hard to tell them apart. So I'm being quite negative, and I shouldn't be, because We Are OK looks fantastic.
Are you saying all indie games look the same, Ian?
A little bit. Nowadays, they do a little bit, unfortunately. They all seem to have settled on this aesthetic, which they all share a bit too readily. But We Are OK does look fantastic. Obviously, it's like a narrative thing with an EP associated to it as well, and a musical side to it, which is fantastic. In terms of musical stuff as well, one of the standouts to me was Sandfall. I thought it looked brilliant, like the rhythm-infused twin-stick shooter.
I get this right with Sandfall, that it procedurally generates levels based around the music?
I think so. I think along those lines. I haven't actually played it yet.
It does. That sounds good. It's also coming to PC and Xbox. Like a lot of these games, a lot of them are coming to PC and or...
And there's stuff like Elekhead is coming, which is one of our favourite games of last year. I think Elekhead's coming to Switch. Mini Motorways came to Switch, which never heard of it. Donnie won't ever stop going on about it.
there's a game called Gibbon Beyond the Trees, which is from the Old Man's Journey people, which is actually out now. And I'll be playing next week, I think, to write something about that. I also played a game called Cult of the Lamb, which is Devolver's new sort of kind of a hack and slash game with kind of RPG elements. It's got a sort of Enter the Gungeon style vibe, but without the guns.
The weird thing about there was so much cool stuff, but the weird thing about the show for me was, like, I obviously love my Switch and everything, but looking at yesterday, it just made me think, these would be great on Steam Deck. That's all I kept thinking, is like, this thanks Nintendo for showing all me these games, which I'm probably going to pick up on Steam Deck now, because of the Switch feels like it's kind of lost its position a little bit as a place to play Call of Duty because of that.
That would be interesting to see. Anything else from the showcase you fancy mentioning?
No, there was some absolutely fantastic stuff. Gumbrella, I think, was the last one, which looked absolutely incredible from the developer of Gata Roboto, which has some of the kind of most incredible hit pauses I've come across in video games in recent years.
I've never heard anyone praising the hit pauses, but I like hit pauses. So
yeah, they're good in Gata Roboto. Okay, let's
leave that behind then and smash on. I wanted to talk quickly about Microsoft's new adaptive accessory range. So this kind of builds on the Xbox Adaptive Controller, although it's PC based for now. And what it is it's like a trio of things. It's a hub that you can plug adaptive buttons in, which you can kind of customize, and an adaptive mouse. And the idea is that you get this kind of bunch of things and you set them up in the way you want to. You can also configure them and modify them in the way you want to with like 3D printed bits and bobs. And it should give you a really customizable way to interact with, I mean, games wasn't the focus, any kind of software, any kind of computer device, PC, Surface, laptops. But there was a Minecraft section on it, this lady playing Minecraft, and she had managed to set up another controller that she could use for her cheek, which was useful for her. And this enabled her to have something like 3 inputs rather than 2 running at one time, which is awesome. And I just wanted to praise Microsoft for their continued kind of development in this area and working with the accessibility community to kind of find more solutions and give people more tools to adapt to the way they want to play, really. So well done,
Microsoft. Yeah, is so far ahead of everyone else on this, it seems.
Their working here is fantastic, and hugely appreciated. And just echoing what you said, like a massive thank you to them basically for their continued hard work in the area.
And come on, Sony, basically, and Nintendo.
Yeah, and Nintendo, really.
I can see Sony making gestures towards it. I can't see Nintendo, unfortunately, ever making much of an effort in that area. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something going on there, but I can't see Nintendo, unfortunately, ever caring that much about it.
So, moving on. Quickly, there was some mixed feedback around some footage of the new Gotham Knights game. I don't know if you guys saw this or if you had an opinion on what you saw. Okay.
Yes. Yes and yes.
I mean, it's cool. It's a game that is not out yet. It's been delayed heavily, and it's clearly gone through a troubled development. And so, first of all, my heart goes out to everybody working on it at Warner Bros. Montreal. I'm sure it's been tough. And so, just keep at it. Um, But yeah, it wasn't a strong showing, unfortunately, for various reasons. Obviously, the most obvious one for a casual player of the Arkham Knights games like me is like, why would I want to play an Arkham Knight game without Batman? What's the point of a Batman game without Batman? And some of the stuff they've kind of put in place in there just doesn't seem to sit that well with it, especially the double soul jump, which I know where's...
Oh, my God. I think it looks genuinely bad, but not only for reasons that I think that they can address. I think there've been some decisions they've made that are fundamentally incorrect, right? And that is one of them. The idea that you've got this character in the gritty Gotham, you know, the home of Batman, who has no superpowers, facing off against, you know, characters like Joker, who has no superpowers. So in the context of this setting and this, what, you know, the universe, really, you have a character who they have given the most ridiculous magic power to just so that he can keep up. Right? It's literally because they have to. Otherwise, he wouldn't work in this game, because he cannot fly. He cannot glide. Batman can't fly. He falls. You know, he's that classic Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah.
He's the Buzz. Yeah. So, but it's flying, and this character cannot do that. He cannot teleport. You know, so they've given him magic soul power that shoots out of his feet to do magic double jumps over the map.
And is this something which is not in? I'm not exactly the well versed in DC Universe. I'm just a Superman boy, not a Batman boy. So is this something that's in the comics? I'm not sure. Is double soul jumping canon?
I don't even think it matters. It's all about the game, right? And in the context of this game, being able to double jump around this Gotham, rainy, dark, gritty, grindy, like Gotham, you know, using soul energy, you know, it's absurd. It's just so stupid looking and silly. No one will want to be that character doing that, right? And that's not the only problem with this character. This character is a ranged shooty character.
Right? On this point, so he has two machine guns, right? Because I was watching the trailer and I was like, oh, boring, you know, guns. But the guns have non-lethal bullets in.
It's so stupid. Right, it's like, and at one point, he's pumping this bad guy full of whatever like non-lethal pellets he's shooting them with, and he's quite close to him. And this enemy it may as well not be happening. It doesn't care. It's not reacting in any way. It's not flinching. There's no feedback that this guy is getting shot. It's like two water pistols, literally into the gut of like the strongest person on the planet. It may as well not be happening. It looks like the weakest, most like lack of impact combat I've seen since, you know, the bad old days of WoW Killers, where the MMO combat where there's no, you're pressing a button and something happens and, you know, the numbers go down, but there's literally nothing happening on screen to suggest that they're being hit with it. It's like that. And, you know,
yeah, it's got kind of skill trees.
Like Dante pulls out his guns. You know, this is a combat you're up against. You know, Devil May Cry, the last Devil May Cry, he's shooting stuff and it's amazing. It's like, you know, that's what they're up against. And if it's not like that and you're doing a gun melee combat game, Bayonetta, you know, yeah, then it looks terrible. Now, don't get me started on the other guy. Jesus Christ!
Like, I don't want to get you started because we're up against it. So we're gonna move
you
on.
Must I think be stopped.
I think it's safe to say that you're not impressed.
So you've got to be careful.
I'm not impressed.
This is the only game coming out in Q4, though. So you better like it, because it's all you've got.
It's probably
basically
really good in co-op. Okay, moving on. Just quickly, Apex Legends is coming to mobile next week, for those of you who care, and I expect that's a lot of you. That's Android and iOS, and that's on Tuesday 17th. Tuesday's the 18th. Anyway, so whichever.
There or thereabouts.
Also, sadly, Ocean Software co-founder David Ward passed away aged 75. So a quick look at Digital Foundry this week. We had John Linneman looking at Switch Sports through a technical and non-technical lens and comparing it to the Wii Sports games that came before it, the ones that showcased the Wii famously and how you could throw your Wiimote at the telly. And in fact, people were doing the same with Switch. We had Will Judd reviewing the new $550 AMD graphics card, the RX 2750 XT, just in case you know which one that means. And he called it a modest mid-gen upgrade. In Videoland this week, we had Ian doing more VR modding. This time it was Elden Ring. So there's a video of him going around the Elden Ring world, which is predictably and obviously amazing in VR with the colossal monsters and all the kind of weird scenery and sort of twisted fantasy that that game has. We had Ian and Aoife playing the co-op dungeon puzzling game We Were Here Forever, which I still haven't had a chance to try, but which looks great, actually. And we had Zoe doing more lore deep dive on Elden Ring, this time on Godwin the Golden, whose absence is the kind of starting point for the whole game and why everything's gone a bit Pete Tong.
Do you think Miyazaki wrote that in the design doc?
I think so.
I think that's actually George R. That's what George R. R. Martin's one contribution was that. That's the thing he said. It's all gone a bit Pete Tong, and that's it. That was his design doc.
In reviews land this week, we caught up with Game Pass game and other platforms, Loot River, which I had a chance to play, which I thought was great. Kind of pixel roguelite, which is a combination of Souls meets Tetris, I think Donlan said in his review. So on the right stick, you move the platforms that you're on. And it feels great because they really speedily kind of skim across the water. And it means that you can time your approach to enemies. You can sort of zip up to the platform and hit them because the like Monster Hunter and Souls, your weapon hits take a long time and kind of leave you exposed. So it's kind of about timing that. And it's a nice world with a kind of nice sort of intriguing fiction in this strange, very Souls-like. It just plonks you in a place and is then like, this is a weird, strange place where and you have to try and fight your way through it. From a Slovakian studio as well, which I like. So give that a try. A game I'm currently playing at the moment, and maybe there will be a review of it today when you're listening to this, is called Songs of Conquest. And I thought it was quite telling when I was in the office the other day and a colleague walked over and went, is that Age of Wonders? And I was like, no. And then went, oh, is it Heroes of Might and Magic? And I was like, no. But maybe from those references, you can kind of get a picture of what it's like.
I've sort of missed those conversations of someone coming over and looking over your shoulder and giving you a running commentary of the game you're playing in the office. It's nice to have that back a little bit.
So it's a mash of these games. Again, pixel-like. It has a kind of Octopath Traveler look, almost identical in some ways. And you walk a kind of hero character around a map collecting all of these kind of loot and power-up pieces. And then you craft a settlement on the same screen, on the same map screen, and you gather an army, and then in grid-based combat you fight other armies, and it's really snappy, it's really stylish, and I really, really like it. So look out for a review on that soon. It's just come out in early access, so you could just play it now instead, but obviously
sounds like reads like a recommended.
It does read like a recommended. In features this week, we have Martin, you writing about, there was an Xbox online outage at the weekend just past. And some people, this left people unable to play some of the games they own. And it kind of reminded everyone of this era of Microsoft pre-Xbox One, just in the lead up to Xbox One, where Microsoft had these big ideas about digital rights management. And how you would own games and where you'd be able to play them. And of course, it became quite notorious and then got scrapped as the console era approached. But it brought back those kind of feelings. And I guess the question of, can we trust Microsoft still? Have they got some big dirty plan in the wings? Or is this just some lingering stuff?
Well, no, I think they've been quite open about their plan. And it's funny how, all those years ago, obviously that famous op-ed, that brilliant op-ed from Tom Brownwell about Microsoft kills game ownership and expects us all to smile. And obviously there was pushback on that, and it kind of, that Xbox One reveal set Microsoft down that horrible path, which they spent a lot of the last 9 years recovering from. But the funny thing is that they kind of did kill off game ownership, and it's not just Microsoft. It's just happened. It's happened everywhere in games and everywhere across all media. And I think we've all been blinded by the convenience of streaming services and subscription services and amazing things like Game Pass as well, to just not care that much. Basically, that it happens, and it's just like, oh, I mean, you just turn around, look, and you realize that a thing that you was really irate about and really were protective of a few years ago just happened quietly and slowly. Which is, yeah, it's a bit of a shame, obviously, but it was a kind of, the outage was quite strange. And it was down to a lot of confusion in terms of policy, in terms of how Microsoft approaches stuff. And they did say they're going to address it. I'm not sure if they ever did, because they said something about, like,
they said there'd be an update.
Yeah, but that hasn't arrived yet, has it?
No.
I was expecting it to happen sooner.
Yeah, I think they're going to just completely change the way it works and to ensure that you can play games offline. Essentially,
I think they will as well, and they'll be more transparent about it. I think that was a problem as well, because this happened over the weekend, and everyone realised Microsoft aren't actually too good at explaining what their policies are or have been, and there's no way you can kind of point towards to say this is exactly how it works. And even when the error pops up on your console, it's really, I'm sure you've had a Microsoft error before on your console, it's just a long string of numbers and letters and everything. It's like, I have no idea what this is. And then you spend about 20 minutes trying to copy it out into Google to see what it is.
Or put it in Twitter to say, hopefully someone else is having it at the same time.
And so I think hopefully it's going to give them a bit of a nudge to actually sort this stuff out and have better messaging when it comes to those errors. And a bit more transparency when it comes to their policies on this stuff as well.
I really enjoyed your piece on that. I thought it was really good. It was exactly what's needed. They just need to come clean. And that's the thing, right? They said they will. I think they've said they will.
They said they will. I get a bit optimistic, I think. I was expecting a kind of an update within 48 hours of it happening. But obviously things aren't exactly that quick, especially in a big corporation like Microsoft. If it is going to be a case of clearing those policies up and kind of reviewing them, it's going to be a little while longer, I guess, until we see the fruits of what they're doing.
Let's wait for Big Phil to wade in.
He should say something. He does need to, I think.
Yeah.
Tell us what's up. Martin, you also wrote about F1 this week, which is not a surprise. At any given week, you could write about
any excuse whatsoever, basically, I'll write about F1.
I'm going to pretend to understand what you wrote. And that's that Codemasters, I'm just going to basically say what the headline was. Codemasters faces the same balancing act with its series of games as F1, the real sport, is facing with balancing what it's doing.
Yeah, well, just like F1's basically more popular than it ever has been before right now. We had a race in Miami at the weekend, which was kind of the point at which F1 finally broke America, something it's been trying to do for, well, as long as I've been alive, basically. As long as I've been watching F1, it's always been like, oh, can the sport break America? They don't care about it. They just care about NASCAR. And I think viewership figures for the Miami race on Sunday fell only slightly short of, I think there's a NASCAR race in Darlington at the weekend. But it was the most encouraging that's ever been. It was crazy, kind of the sold out stands and American fans actually understanding what the sport is as well, thanks to Drive to Survive. And it's just pushing the sport to a bigger audience. But it's always going to be difficult because of, you've got people like me who are grumpy and everything, and it's like, oh, F1's not what it used to be. It shouldn't be about racing around a car park with a fake marina and stuff like this, and how it's all about the show. And it's not about 2 hours. It's like F1 should be about having a nap for 2 hours in an afternoon where you just watch cars go around in circles, not this newfangled thing where you've got overtaking assists and there's action all the time and stuff like that. So it's, and Codemasters has that same balancing act, basically, where it's got a game which was, it started off quite modestly and kind of has that sim aspect to it as well, and was playing to what is, like, it is in terms of obviously motorsports, it's a big audience, but in terms of wider sports, like F1's not as big as football yet. I thought, like, at the Grand Prix do attract a similar audience to World Cups, but anyway, F1 isn't isn't as big as FIFA yet, but with the right wind it could be, because the sport's getting that popular, and Codemasters has that that balancing act of having to cater for people like me with a special seat and my own little VR headset and people who just want to play something more akin to Mario Kart, basically.
Do you mean F1 isn't as big as EA Sports FC yet?
Not yet. It's EA Sports F1 as well.
Well, just quickly, we had Also in features, we had a more in-depth look at what appears to be a blossoming Indonesian independent game-making scene, which recently and sadly, of course, lost a star in the making, Coffee Talk creator Fahmi, whose comments are featured in the piece with the permission of his family. We also had Scott McRae writing about what he thinks is the best and most overlooked Zelda game, Minish Cap. Or Minish Cap. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Is he right? Which is the best Zelda game?
Which is the best Zelda game?
How long have you got?
A minute.
Minish Cap is one of the Capcom ones. And I believe I could be wrong because obviously the original Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons were both directed by someone who went on to join Nintendo from Capcom and directed a little-known game called Breath of the Wild, which many people would consider to be the best. Many people would consider that to be the best Zelda game. I certainly would. And so I think Minish Cap, was directed by him as well. But it's a, I sort of agree as well. It's a beautifully, if you've never played it before, it's like a beautifully idiosyncratic take on Zelda with this like little shrinking mechanic in it. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And wouldn't it be great if you could play it on your Nintendo Switch? But sadly, that's not possible just yet.
Wes, do you have a favorite Zelda game?
Have you ever played a Zelda game, Wes?
Yes, I have. I've played Ocarina of Time from start to finish and Wind Waker from start to finish and then sort of dropped off. So having only played two of them, I would say it's Ocarina of Time.
Good shout.
Good shout. I would go Wind Waker, but again, I haven't played many of them, so I'm in a similar boat. Well, thank you. That's
clever, by the way. Wind,
yeah.
The reference.
Was that deliberate?
Like that.
Yeah. He has no idea what he's done, does he?
I don't know what I just did.
Windbreaker's got a boat in it.
You sail around in a boat and you just went, I'm in a similar boat. I thought you were being next level, like, playing 4D chess.
I'll edit that out. Well, thank you both for joining me. That's This Week in Brief. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
And thank you, Wesley.
Cheers.
We'll be back at the same time next week. See you then.